like, no, you don't. So I think when someone comes to you with a methodology, or if you're thinking methodology first, really what you need to ask is, what question are we trying to answer? What problem are we trying to solve? And really dig deep into, what does success look like? What are those metrics of success? And understand everything about what needs to be done before you even think about methodology. It should be the last thing that you focus on. And then I think the second thing, I mean, there's many things. That's why I was saying, read the book, you can come away with things. But the two biggest things are, don't focus on methodology. Have that be the very last thing you worry about. And the second thing is to focus on sales. Everything that we do in Consumer Insights must lead to sales.
Welcome to Talking Insights. I'm your host, Antonio. And with us today, we have Brett Townsend. He's the Senior Vice President of Strategy at Questor Strategy. Is that right, Brett?
Yes.
Well, thank you very much for being here.
Thank you.
Brett, you've worked in a lot of major brands. I was looking into to your little resume on LinkedIn, and you've worked in like Pepsi, Doritos, Walmart, Lowe's. You've worked in a major industries, retail, food and beverages, restaurants, clothing. And now you've released a book, Insights on the Brink. What initially drew you to the field, to the market research and to this whole industry? How did you land up here?
Yeah, you could ask that question of any professional and there would be some kind of fun story about how they did that, because most people my age didn't intend to go into market research or consumer insights. We kind of found our way there. So for me, I started my career in TV and radio broadcasting, and that's what my undergraduate degree at university was in. And so I did that for a few years, but then ended up getting a job through a friend of mine with the Nielsen Media Research Company that does the television ratings in the United States, and really got intrigued with the qualitative work we did, the behavioral and observational work we did, in addition to the sampling and the marketing and things. And so that's really where I started to get the idea that I wanted to do this with my career, and just kind of blossomed from there.
That's interesting. The other day I was talking with some colleagues, and we were mentioning the same thing, like the TV and the radio, and how we did ratings a couple of years ago, probably the way that you did it before I was born, and how we do it now, and how everything kind of changed, but at the same way it didn't. So it was fascinating in that way. I also come from a TV background, so I also nice. Have that some time of experience on that side. How do you balance the client needs and what the client ask and what the market ask, but at the same time you keep pushing boundaries of innovation? How do you balance those two things?
You know, there's a number of different things. So whether you're on the client corporate side or you're on the agency side, I think the principles are the same. And I've worked on both sides of that fence. I think it requires, first of all, curiosity, because we can't be complacent with the way things are, or we can't just accept what we are told, or institutional knowledge at companies. You know, there's so many companies have been doing things the same way for so long. Our industry has been doing so many things the same way for so long, that we have to have people that are curious about what else could be done or how it could be done better. We have to be bold. We have to be able to say, we need to do something different. We need to change the way we do things. We need to look at things differently. And it takes some courage. It takes relationship building, because you have to take people with you on this journey. If you try to just go off and do it yourself, you'll probably be just by yourself. So it's building those relationships, not only if you're with your client on the agency side, but with your stakeholders when you're on the corporate side. And then just that willingness to do things differently and to look for better solutions. And then finally, it's really about just storytelling. Once we get it done, how do we tell that story so that people can understand, gain trust in what we do, and then trust us to do more things differently? But we have to start small and work up to it, for sure.
That's interesting. I always like to ask that question. Like, I'm new to the industry. I'm new in general. I mean, not that new, but, and I always like to ask, like, what people that are working in the industry for a number of years, like their insights and how they continue to innovate and push the boundaries on their work, because otherwise it just keeps staling, and if your work just stays the same for 10, 20 years, it's kind of boring.
Yeah, curiosity not only to question the way things are currently done, but curiosity to go find out what else there is. And, you know, that's how we have people who come to us at Quester, is they get curious and then they hear about us or read about us and then they say, hey, just tell me a little bit more. And so it's really about just looking for what else is out there. If we stay within our own cocoons and things, then it's just, we're going to just keep doing the same things the same ways.
Yeah. Do you have, and I know that it could be a hard question, but for all the times that we worked on the industry, do you have like a project that you're particularly proud of, or one moment that you're really proud of in your career?
Oh gosh, you're right. That is, there's a lot. I think it's trying to pick which one. So I think one of the ones that comes to mind is some work that I did at PepsiCo in conjunction with Walmart. And Walmart wanted to compete with convenience stores for that quick trip that people would have for drinks or snacks or things like that. And they had this vision of how to redo the front end of their store, but they didn't really know how to do it. And so we took that up with them, and we started to look at what are the things in their front end that can change? What are things that they could offer that would draw people there? Because so many people go to Walmart anyway, how could they keep those trips at Walmart versus going somewhere else? And so the end result was we basically helped them understand what people were looking for in the front end, how they could cater to that without really taking a PepsiCo view to it. You know, just really saying, here's what you can do, Walmart, holistically, that will help you gain that trip and earn those types of basket builds. And then what the result was is, and we see it a lot here in the United States, where Walmart has these little convenient store areas up in the front of the store. They completely revamped the way that they did things. And we ended up getting a lot of extra incremental space at PepsiCo because of what we did. And as anybody in the CPG world will tell you, that incremental space is gold, and that's what everybody shoots for, and we are able to get quite a bit of it nationally through Walmart. And then the thing that not only I'm proud, because we were able to uncover what are the needs from the consumer in a non-selfish way to PepsiCo, where we really were able to honestly tell Walmart, hey, this is what you need to do to service your customers and to help them. So that was really so that was a good thing that we were able to do that. But then the other thing that I was proud of is that there were two different times during that project where I was told to not do it anymore, or told that we don't have any more money to continue to do it. And I just refused to accept that because I knew that we were on to something. And so with the support of my boss, we kept going and kind of put ourselves out there a little bit, and the results were pretty great. And I think people were thanking me at the end for persevering and keep going. But there were a couple of times where we thought it would be killed, and we just wouldn't be able to really capture what we felt was possible for us in Walmart.
Yeah, that's yeah. I mean, you gotta have the dreams, but at the same time, you have to follow the dreams and don't. There's a lot of barriers in the middle, but you have to keep following and keep pushing. If you know that the dreams are right and then the project is right and everything, yeah, in the end, it's a win-win situation for all.
Yeah, and you can see the potential return on investment. You know, we saw, you know, while I was doing that, I saw that there was an avenue for potentially more space, more sales. Of course, that's the language everybody speaks, right?
Yeah.
And so, yeah, just keeping with that and trusting yourself that you know the right path.
And I can imagine that you're also proud of one of the most recent projects that you have, right? The book, Insights on the Drink. Now, you work on the book with Tim Hoskins. He also works at Quester.
Yes.
What inspired you and Tim to work on the book, to release it? What was the thought process?
We both just feel strongly about two different things. One, that the industry needs to change. The industry needs to evolve. We are still stuck in so many of the old clinical and academic ways that we do things, and our industry was created in a day and age that's very different than now. And so just with the experience that we've had and the successes that we've both had, both on the corporate side and with Quester, we felt like we needed to present a path for the industry to be able to change. I think that's number one. And as part of that, the second reason was we wanted to start conversations. We noticed that there's a number of people that we talk to over the years that know the system's broken, but they don't know how to fix it, or they don't really want to try to fix it, or they don't have the strength or the courage or the time to be able to try to do something. And at the very least, we just wanted to start conversations, to get people talking, to get people to say, yes, you're right about this, or no, you're wrong about this, but let's talk about how we could do that. And so I think those were the two main motivations that we had, because we both have worked in this industry for a long time and we both really love it. And so it really is kind of a service to the industry that we've worked in and that we love to say, look, we can be so much better and we can evolve the way that we need to and not have all of the budget cuts and the headcount cuts, and to create better culture through our work and get people to really appreciate and love what we do as an industry, because our potential is amazing. But I think we fall short of our potential so much because we're limited by methodology or by dogma or by just routine that we lose sight of what really the real prize is.
It's almost like the politics of market research kind of undermine everything. It's interesting. Again, as I told you in the beginning, like I'm kind of new in the industry. I've been doing this for a few months, and I get that. I get that the dogma and the culture that the company has to have. Not only, I mean, obviously at SMR we have a culture within the company, but when we go out to all these events and we have throughout the year we have a bunch of events. And we meet like these people from the companies, and you can tell like how they work and like how sometimes they are proud of their jobs, but at the same time they're not really proud of working. And it's an interesting balance. In the book and in Insights of the Brink, there's a part where you're kind of talking about the surface level insights and how the problems with that. How do you say for the researchers to go deep and to avoid these common traps, like how to dig deep on these insights?
Yeah, so we have undergone some change in our industry where we have technology that's really been helping us. So back in the 1990s, everybody was worried about what the internet was going to do to market research, and all it did was move the methods from telephone and paper online, and it made us cheaper and more efficient, and it was great. Well, now we have AI, and people think AI is the new bad guy, the new boogeyman that we should be afraid of, just like people were warning us and telling us to be afraid of the internet. And really, all it's been doing so far is just moving methodologies that we've been doing for the last 80 or 90 years, just doing them a different way in AI. There's also been this rise of self-service tools and companies that let companies kind of do their own surveys and things like that. And so what that's enabled people to do is to stretch their budgets and to be able to get more data. The concern with a lot of these things is that if we still look at market research the way that we always have, then it doesn't matter what tools or technologies arise, we're still just going to be getting the same data and just doing things differently, but still really the same. And so what it does is it just commoditizes what we do in market research. If anybody can just create a tool, then it just makes it a commodity. And so what we're saying is those tools have been great and useful and have really put market research into the hands of a lot of people who need it and democratized the data. But what it's also done is sometimes gets us away if we misuse them. I think that's the key, is that everything is good if we're using it the right way. But if we're misusing it, which happens very often, then again, we just become too methodology obsessed. We're just kind of getting what you mentioned, the surface level insights, meaning that we're just kind of getting what's sitting on the top, which isn't really insight. It's just data. It's just information. The insight comes when you really dig deep with a consumer, when you really understand emotional connection, when you understand the narratives that drive the beliefs and the behaviors that we measure through these methods. And it's a way to, like, are we really trying to develop empathy for the consumer and develop solutions for them? Or are we just gathering data? Because with all the data and information we have, there's no emotion and there's no empathy in data. You know, we have to have those stories. We have to have that in-depth understanding and feeling for our consumer and what they deal with, and then how can we create solutions, not products, that can help them in their journey through life. And I think that's what we mean about going deep and getting past the surface, which is what a lot of the typical methodologies give us, and really end up digging deeper and to understand what really consumers are feeling and thinking, and that connection as a whole.
I would even link it to the curiosity that you were mentioning, like to keep interested and keep having this curiosity within yourself, within your profession and your job. If you keep that, your work and all these insights that you can get will go so much deeper, and you will get so much better work done and insights.
Yeah, I always tell people that consumer insights professionals are like three-year-old children. We should always be asking why, you know, why? Yeah. Well, I buy this at the store every time. Why? And, you know, the more you dig on that and the more you don't accept the first answer that a consumer gives you, then the more you really get down into those second, third, fourth, fifth layers of insight that really where change happens.
That's so interesting. To finish it off, I would ask you, We have a new professionals in the industry that listen to this. What's a takeaway that you would give them for the book? Like, what's the special takeaway that you would give for the new researchers?
Wow, I don't know if there's just one, but I think the first thing is, if you read the book, you'll come away with very practical ways that you can make a difference immediately. So many books that we saw that are geared towards the consumer insights profession are philosophical, and you come away with it and you come away from it thinking, wow, that was really interesting, but then you don't really know what to go do about it. So I think that was one of our main goals in writing, was that we wanted it to be a practical way that professionals could take something away regardless of your level and do something differently and better in your job that can make a difference immediately. Aside from that, what I would say is make methodology the last thing you worry about, not the first thing. People would come to me and my team at PepsiCo, at Electrolux, different places, and they would come to us and say, hey, we need to do focus groups. And we would just say, no, you don't. It's like, oh, hey, we need to do an ANU survey. We're like, no, you don't. So I think when someone comes to you with a methodology, or if you're thinking methodology first, really what you need to ask is, what question are we trying to answer? What problem are we trying to solve? And really dig deep into, what does success look like? What are those metrics of success? And understand everything about what needs to be done before you even think about methodology. It should be the last thing that you focus on. And then I think the second thing, there's many things. That's why I was saying, read the book, you can come away with things. But the two biggest things are, don't focus on methodology. Have that be the very last thing you worry about. The second thing is to focus on sales. Everything that we do in Consumer Insights must lead to sales. We do a lot of interesting research that can't really turn into anything. And we get caught up in kind of the academic nature of doing research and thinking, oh, this is really interesting. But if you don't see how a research project you've been asked to do can lead to sales, or a project you're developing can lead to sales, then you need to rethink it or not do it. Because that's part of the reason why we're being devalued as an industry, is because so much of what we do doesn't lead to sales. And that's how we show our worth and show our value. And so we make ourselves so valuable to these companies that they wouldn't dare cut our funding or cut our people, because we contribute to sales for a company, and that's what anybody wants.
That's great. Thank you so much, Brett. Go, everyone, go read the book. There's a link in the description of this episode. You can find it on Amazon. Can you find it on physical stores as well?
No, just on Amazon at this point.
All right. There's the link on the description for that. So go listen. It's a fantastic book. There's a lot of insights. There's a lot to learn. Honestly, I read it and it was fantastic. And everyone at the team kind of are going through at the moment. And they're finding it amazing. So thank you so much, Brett, for your time.
Thank
Thank you
you.
so much
Appreciate
for
that.
releasing this and all your work and your inspiration. It's been really fun to do this.
Well, thank you for having me, Antonio. Thanks very much for your comments about the book, too. We appreciate it.
You very much.